Starting today, we are kicking off a three-part mini-series about the wine industry. When you go into a wine shop, you would not be surprised to see bottles for $10 or less and others for hundreds of dollars. And as global demand for wine skyrockets, the price of fine wines at auction often runs in the tens of thousands of dollars or more. Taking into account that it is especially difficult for non-experts to tell wines apart, this creates a perfect climate for one group of people to profit handsomely: counterfeiters. Counterfeit wines may not be a headline story, but it makes up a large and growing sector of the wine market. And joining me now is Christine Honey, who is a senior investigations editor at Zero Point Zero. She has written several articles about wine crimes for Food Republic. Christine, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
One of the few people who did make headlines for his involvement in wine counterfeiting was Rudy Kerniawan. Who was he, and how did he get his start in the wine business?
Yes, Rudy was all over the papers, and he was a great kind of wine fraudster. He was a college kid, Indonesian born from California, and had a great bottle of wine with an Opus One with his parents at a birthday celebration in San Francisco. He just learned how to kind of wine and dine his way up through the highest echelons of the wine world, and then he came to New York, and he targeted real estate, he targeted bankers, mainly real estate in the boom, and just brought these people into his circle.
People who want to impress by having the best wines.
Yes, because if you have money, you want to have, they say, the best seller, the best cars, the best homes, and you want to be seen as having knowing a lot about wine.
At the same time, he was also selling legitimate wines. That gave him a certain respectability and kept people from questioning whether the wine they were getting wasn't the real thing?
Yes, and he was really kind of out and about in New York. So he was selling fake wines and real wines and donating fake and real to the real kind of wine elite.
So what happens if you buy a wine for $10,000 and it doesn't really seem all that special? You just simply say, well, maybe it wasn't stored well, or maybe my palate isn't sophisticated enough. Didn't people complain?
That's what's kind of wonderful about Rudy Kerniawan. He kind of targeted people who were a bit too embarrassed to complain. These weren't people who had been having wine for 40 years and were tasting it with their parents from childhood. This was new money, and he knew exactly who to go after.
How was Christie's Auction House involved in these sales?
Christie's Auction House, in our investigations, had actually been warned by one wine expert to not sell Rudy wines, and they still move forward with the auction.
And didn't they attempt to get the story suppressed?
They did. We brought our questions to Christie's, and they sent a cease and desist order to 0.0 for simply asking the question.
Should I assume that any number of Rudy's wines are still in circulation?
Yes, actually, it's more than $500 million worth of Rudy Kerniawan wine is still just out there.
$500 million worth of wine.
Yes.
Wow. And is there any way to tell which wines are the real ones and which ones aren't? He had to get an awful lot of old bottles, didn't he, and labels to put the counterfeit wines into?
Yes, there's an industry that's grown for kind of wine consultants who can help you distinguish this. It could just be, an accent over, part of the name of a French wine that would, make the difference. But, a lot of wealthy people are enlisting consultants to kind of help them with this. But these counterfeiters are incredibly clever, and not just Kerniawan.
But you also say that there were suspicions that Rudy was producing fake wine for years, and yet no one in the industry said anything. Why not?
Yes. I mean, that's what's great about covering the wine industry. It's pretty closed off, and there's a lot of backstabbing that happens among the people, but they don't really want to kind of turn each other in.
How was he caught?
He was caught in his home with this whole winemaking facility. I mean, the federal agents have these images of just bottles and labels and everything. It was like a wine factory.
Now, I'm assuming that he put a Merlot into a bottle that it would have been a great, maybe a California Merlot into a bottle of what would have been a great French Merlot?
Yes, and what he'd do is he'd take an off year. So he would buy something that would be a bad year, and he'd mix it, put it in the bottle of something that was supposed to be a good year, and he would kind of mix things up.
he was caught and he was sentenced to 10 years?
Yes.
Do you think that's a reasonable sentence for creating fake wine?
Well, in the world of crime, the big argument right now is wine is kind of a good way to go. Not to endorse becoming a criminal, but it used to be years ago, counterfeiting money was better than drug dealing because you got more money and you spent less time in prison. Criminals view wine now as a great way to go because you can make a lot of money and you don't spend that much time in prison.
Aren't U.S. federal marshals attempting to auction off his wines?
Yes.
So how would I know whether I'm getting the real thing or not?
It would help if you kind of had a consultant working with you or, as kind of a layperson, I wouldn't know which would be the great wine, the, fake wine.
The big problem is you'd have to open it. And by then, you would have spoiled the wine.
Well, you would know a lot from the labeling. And there is a whole movement happening with some winemakers where they're putting in kind of holograms and trace back devices to their wine bottles.
But counterfeiting didn't start with Rudy. After all, wasn't Hardy Rodenstock, the man behind the counterfeit Thomas Jefferson bottles, exposed as a fraud over a decade ago?
Yes, and actually, the first Jefferson bottle was auctioned off, I think, 30 years ago. So this has been going on for years. It's actually been going on for, thousands of years with the Greeks. But Hardy Rodenstock really had, it was a fan of Bordeaux, and there are some sources saying that he's still kind of out there manufacturing fake wines.
He, one of the wines, again, was sold at Christie's Auction House. Haven't some of the Thomas Jefferson wines been valued at over $500,000?
I don't remember the latest valuation. The first
but
bottle.
But I remember the bottle that was broken at that party. Do you remember that story?
Yes,
that was over $500,000.
That's
William Sokolin.
Yes, you're right, with the what it was insured for.
Now, didn't one of the Koch brothers get involved in this case?
Yes, the Koch brothers are great because, as one of our sources...
They are great?
They're great in the context of going after wine criminals, which is kind of a funny thing to see. There are so many multimillionaires and billionaires in New York City who will just lose millions of dollars and walk away and not say a word because they're too embarrassed. Bill Koch is the one billionaire who stepped up and said, I'm going to get these guys. I'm going to sue them till they don't know what hit them.
Now, William Koch is not one of the famous Koch brothers. He's not Charles or David. He's the twin of David.
Yes, he's the estranged brother. So with lots of money.
So he sued.
He sued, and he sued kind of everyone he could. And he hired former government agents. I mean, he went to town to take on wine fraud because there is no government agency that has the resources to really address this. They have too much on their plates.
I'm speaking with Christine Harney, who is a senior investigations editor at Zero Point Zero. And also, she's written about wine crimes at Food Republic. Now, we know about these two. But you suggested that there are lots of people doing this these days. Should I assume that there are respectable people, winemakers, who are also engaged in this?
I don't know if I would say respectable winemakers doing this, but there's a huge industry for fake wine.
For example, if I were a winemaker who hadn't, had some good years and had some bad years, couldn't I just try to pawn off the bad years as good years?
I guess you could. A lot of people who don't go into the wine business, I mean, the joke about the wine industry is if you want to make $1 million, start with two. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of money. It really has to be kind of passion.
Aren't counterfeit French wines rampant in China?
Yes. They say at least one out of two bottles of wine right now in China are fakes.
And who's supplying them?
They have this whole world of kind of counterfeit wines in China. They even have like a Lafite barge that keeps going, floating from place to place. And then when it gets, caught, it just moves and relocates.
Is the Chinese government cracking down on the counterfeiters?
Yes, they are trying to crack down on them. But they have a long way to go. And they also don't know as much about, wines.
Now, there's a big art forgery case that has been in the courts recently, and the dealer, the respected gallery owner, is being sued. Who's responsible here? If I buy a wine from a supposedly respectable source, maybe a fancy wine store. Is that dealer culpable?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of the Kernighan wines were traced back to Acker, Merrill & Condit, the wine store on the Upper West Side. But no one there was ever kind of indicted or charged being so kind of closely affiliated with Kernighan.
I would assume that legitimate winemakers are concerned.
Legitimate winemakers are very concerned, but the way they're handling it is very varied. So when we went out to Opus One in Napa, they are getting holograms. They're doing everything they can to, you know, fight the counterfeiters. There are a lot of other winemakers who just want to look the other way. And in the case of Bordeaux, one French government official lost his job for talking about just how prevalent it was.
The reason I asked about legitimate winemakers is there have been a lot of stories about olive oil where people supposedly were selling Italian olive oil, but actually were mixing in Greek or Spanish olive oil. And the EU has gotten very involved in tracking those things down.
Yes. The olive oil case is very interesting. And most of them are not extra virgin. And I guess a lot of, if it says Italian oil, it could say the olives are from the Mediterranean. And a lot of them are now coming from Northern Africa and even Syria.
Now, it's not just counterfeiting where the wine crimes occur. You also covered the outright theft of wine from Thomas Keller's famous French Laundry restaurant in Napa Valley. What happened there?
Oh, yes. That happened over the Christmas holidays where just all of these incredibly fine wines were stolen. And we found in our reporting that it looks like it's a pattern that there were other high-end restaurants in the Bay Area that were targeted as well. So they're waiting to kind of close in on an arrest on that.
They just break into the wine cellar or the restaurant?
Yes. There's a similar case that I also reported on in Seattle that we believe is similar to what happened with the Keller case. And that was a wine storage facility that they kind of scoped out before.
So what would happen with those wines? They are high-level wines. Who do the thieves sell them to?
So in the case of the Thomas Keller wines, they ended up with a lawyer, an individual bought them, and he was in the Carolinas, and he returned them to his lawyer once he realized they were fakes. A lot of these stolen wines are also going to Asia, and they're going through Hong Kong.
Were the thieves in the Keller case ever caught?
Not to my knowledge at this point.
So he got a double whammy. He got that terrible review for Per Se in the New York Times and some really expensive wine stolen in the French Laundry.
It's not easy being a restaurant.
When you pursue stories like this, don't you run the risk of hearing people say, well, so what if a bunch of rich people bought some fake wine?
Yes, but the thing that's...
To impress people.
Right. I mean, and that's what kind of makes the reporting hard and wonderful, because in this case, so many rich people did not want to talk. But, you know, in China, this is a safety issue. There's also wine that's being passed off that's not wine that could kill people. And so that's what this French government official who we reported on really faced. He nearly lost his job for it. And he was talking about people's lives are endangered by having a, you know, celebratory bottle of wine.
Do we see more counterfeiting in one part of the world than others, other than China?
We really see a lot of it right now in Asia, to the point that a lot of Chinese drinkers are skeptical. But they're also becoming much more savvy about the big counterfeit bottles, which are kind of the top 15 Bordeaux.
You write about other things. This is not about wine, but aren't you also pursuing a story about how a saffron importer was out on an ISIS watch list?
Yes, that was really interesting to report on. Basically 90% of our saffron in the world comes from Iran. So until just about now, it's been illegal. So a lot of it kind of went through Spain. So we found a Harvard Business School student, ex-military, who tried to start a business in Afghanistan importing Afghani saffron to the United States. But when she went back for this recent harvest, she ended up in a ISIS watch list for trying to work with Afghani farmers and bring their product here.
Are we seeing any new developments in the wine fraud cases? Because as you've mentioned earlier, it's kind of hard to get people to talk.
There was a new book out about called Thirsty Dragon, which I just read, which has been great to read about what's happening in wine fraud in China. We're definitely going to see some shifts. I was at a Bordeaux tasting last week, and the Bordeaux Chateau were incredibly welcoming because what do they no longer have? They don't have billionaire Chinese buyers like they did a year ago, especially with the Chinese economy. So a lot is going to come out with the shifting economy in China.
And you said Asia in general, because wine has not been a part of Asian traditions until only recently become popular.
Yes, and there's a lot of kind of French winemakers expanding and growing in China. And it's the, you know, when I was talking to these Bordeaux Chateau last week, they really view China as a place to grow a middle market.
Christine Honey is a senior investigations editor at Zero Point Zero, and she's written several articles about wine crimes for Food Republic. And Christine, I thank you so much for talking about this. Now, when I go into a wine shop, I'm not likely to have to deal with counterfeit wine because I never buy anything that costs more than $20.
Thank you. Yes, I think you're going to be on the safe side.
But when people bring what looks like an expensive wine to my home, should I try to have it checked out?
You might want to bite your tongue and just graciously say thank you and, you know, try it maybe when they leave.
Thanks again.
Thank you.